Hey everyone, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and this is a place where I bring you authentic conversations with people who are willing to share their journey through seasons of grief. No matter your cultural upbringing, societal conditioning, or faith practice, grief affects us all. Whether you're dealing with a loss, a diagnosis, a broken heart, or the everyday stressors of life, or love someone who is, these conversations are here to support you in that process. So be sure to check out the show notes for potential trigger warnings. And whether you're very comfortable with or deeply avoidant of grief and its many responses, you are welcome here. Thank you for being here, and now on to the episode. Hey everybody, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and it has been a minute since I have had an episode. Life has been lifing, and I've been adjusting. And in that process, haven't released an episode because of the production and schedules and all the things. And so, which I had been told, and friends of mine had said, hey, Rachel, we love hearing the guests, but maybe we could hear from you and you share a little bit of your story. And I have to say, I did not like that idea. I don't have a problem sharing my story, but I feel much more comfortable if I ask the questions, right? Like, let me ask someone else the questions and them share their story and talk. And then I have to take my own medicine and practice vulnerability. And that's a fun thing to do. So here I am. I was on, I had a first time experience. I got to be on a podcast for the first time as a guest and shared part of my story. And as I was sharing it, I was telling her, I've never talked about this in this setting. Like, I've had people hear snippets of my story, but never just like, hey, here it is, and let's talk about it in a little more in depth. That episode comes out in November, and I thought, well, after I got through the nervousness and the imposter syndrome that comes up. So one of the sweet ladies in my life that said, I don't think you're trying to be an imposter. So maybe you just be authentic. And I thought, oh yeah, that's right. So what I would share, kind of in the vein of that podcast that I was on, she asked some great questions that really I just respond better when people ask me questions rather than just open-ended discussion like this. So I'm going to try to think of those questions in my head and not go full ADHD. So part of what I have shared is that, yes, I had early childhood trauma. My mom died early. My dad died when I just turned 20. My mom when I would just turn, or was about to turn 11. I was 10 years old. And then my early childhood reads kind of like a script from Jerry Springer, and that will date me. Okay. That will definitely prove that I am in my 40s. I'm 46. My kids don't know that reference. I don't expect any of the younger crew to know that, but just think reality TV talk show. That's what my upbringing was like. And I don't think, and I know that I didn't really, I knew stories and I could tell stories and use humor about my childhood, but it wasn't until after my divorce that I really started to dive into what those stories meant. Like, okay, yes, that happened, but could it be possible that some of those things that I wasn't working through were coming up in my adult life? So I share that I understood grief as far as bereavement, but when I met divorce, I got to peel back another layer of my understanding of grief, of what, and I love John Onwuechekwa, who says, if humanity were a country, then grief would be our language. And so we don't have a journey, a grief journey per se, that is going to end at some point. There's no end to grief. It's with us for the rest of our lives, but we learn to speak the language, we learn to speak the dialect, and we become fluent in our understanding of grief. And I feel like I got an immersion, a language immersion after divorce in a way that I didn't with the death. And he also, John, also has what he calls that there's tangible grief and then there's ambiguous grief. And for me, it was touching on the ambiguous. So when we lose someone, there's it's kind of an accepted thing. Like people understand you're upset because you've lost this person. There's a funeral, there's a burial, there's tears that are connected to that experience, and people gather around and support and love and understand why you would be grieving. But let's say there's an ambiguous grief that is also present where people may not know why you're sad because it's a loss of a dream, a loss of security. There's so many things that are ambiguous that we would experience that really it's hard for people to understand. Why is that still affecting you? What I've come to realize, for me, the biggest growth process in understanding how to navigate grief for what would I want to communicate? And it kept coming up that really the first thing is the permission to be affected, the permission to be affected by something that's happened to you, no matter the time frame that it happened. So whether it was 20 years ago or 20 minutes ago, you're going to be affected. And also a willingness to look at the ways that you might be affected by something that happened so long ago and how that could be showing up in your life now. And so what happens when we don't pay attention and we don't want to acknowledge why or how we're affected by grief or by experiences that are calling for us to grieve, that are inviting us to be with our grief. And then that leans to the second point of not only are we allowing ourselves permission to be affected by something, but we are asking, how can we attune to that? What's needed? Once we come to a realization that we are affected, how do we pay attention to the need of the moment and meet our need in that moment? How do we show up? How do I show up for myself when I know I'm being affected by something? And that affected could come out in numerous ways before I finally make the connection that, hey, I think this is something different. I've given the example of on a prior episode about when my son started to drive, and very early on, he wanted to go to, I believe it was a basketball game. It was a sporting event for a school. They'd made the playoff, and he wanted to drive, he and his brother, younger brother, to this event that was probably 45 minutes away from our city. And I was hemming and hawing and putting it off. And he'd come to me and be like, hey, did you, hey, this is coming up. Are you going to sign these permissions? And instead of facing it, I was delaying it until finally the night before the event, he comes to me and he's like, hey, we got to discuss this. And I was shut down and I realized the reaction and the response. So they say, if it's hysterical, it's historical. And I was having that moment where I was deeply activated. This felt bigger than just letting my kid get in the car and go. And I wanted to be the mom that was like, yeah, buddy, go have fun. But every time I've had one of my kids drive, I've met this anxiety. But it was my son's graciousness and his kindness and his response that night to say, Mom, you know, I'm a good driver. You know, I will do, you know, I'll call, I'll text, I'll whatever things I need to do to help you feel at ease. But do you think this might have something to do with your dad? And I was just like, oh, shut your face, maybe so. So it really was this moment of, yes, this is it's like a projector screen. Here's this experience that happened in 1998. And at the time it's 2022, or, you know, and I am unable to separate those two events. I am in such fight, flight, freeze an anxiety in my body. I'm having a visceral reaction to my son driving and all the fear that was around it because my dad was killed in a car accident. So anybody outside looking in would go, well, of course, right? Of course you would be affected by that. But so the need of that moment was not going to be forcing me to do something that my body was like, shut down. I just want to say no. What I needed was compassion. the need of the moment was a compassion for that part of me that was scared, that was terrified of putting my child in the road because I've seen what can happen. I have had major loss and the idea of losing him just unbearable. So what I know about me and what I want for my life is that I want to be affected. I want to allow that, but I don't want to make decisions from that space. And so that leads to the process of, okay, what do I need right now? And I remember telling him, okay, yep, that feels like that might be accurate. I need a minute. Can you give me a minute? Because I needed to be with that and help allow my body to soften and allow my heart to open to the moving through that compassionately with myself. The other aspect of that is being able to recognize in the process of what you're being compassionate about and what you're allowing yourself to feel, to be vulnerable in the step of sharing that with someone, with others in your world that feel safe to do that, whether it's one person, a group that you're involved in, but to be able to say that I could text my friend and say, I'm having a hard time releasing my child and I just want to say this sucks and this is difficult and it reminds me of what I lost and it's hard not to fear losing everything all again. And I'll have to tell you, like, honestly, I've had two other drivers since then, four teenagers, and my daughter, my number three, just started driving. But what I noticed is I was affected, but it was less. I'm still affected, but it was less intense. And I had strategy in place this time. I trust her. I really do. She's such a cautious driver. But all that to say, I think that it's very important for us as we learn to grieve and as we're processing things and experiences that we're having on a day-to-day basis, that we understand that something that could be coming up for us might actually be an experience that we have experienced from a loss, or whether that's an actual tangible loss or an ambiguous loss, and it could be affecting us. Vulnerably for me, what I've learned after divorce is recognizing that duality exists. Two things can exist at the same time. There can be something that, like a divorce, that is needed and necessary, and also very painful, the reality of raising four kids, being the sole provider. After my dad died, and I was, I'd say it was about 5 years. I got married at 25. So that 5 year span of where everything is on me. And that feeling that I had of, like, there's nobody, like, it's just going to be me. And the beautiful thing is, at the time, I had no idea how and in what ways I would be provided for, and things would be miraculous in showing up for me in scenarios where an entire family comes in and legally adopts me as an adult. The Terry family that I went to live with when I was 21 in their basement apartment. It was the year after my dad died. And they were like, yeah, come live for free for, 6 months or so, try it out, and then we'll see. Because they knew I was struggling with all of the bills and everything at the time. And so they walked me down the aisle. I was part of their family. And then 5 years later, they came to me and said, hey, Rachel, would you be willing we'd love to adopt you, like legally adopt you. And so that happened. And they have four biological children. So even now, when I talk about mom and dad, I could be talking about my adopted mom and dad or my bio mom and dad. But when I was 19 or 20, when my dad died, the trauma of that when it came to being provided for was huge. Here I was, an orphan. Like, I didn't have any parents that I could call and say, I broke down on the side of the road. Or I remember being, who's going to who's going to work on my car? Because we had so little money growing up. And my first car was like $700. It was a 1991 Nissan Pulsar, if anybody even knows what that car is. And then like I had a Ford Taurus. But then the car that I had when my dad died was a Renault. I don't know if you know that car. It's a French car and it's terrible. But he was a jack of all trades and was my mechanic and would, when my, let's say, thermostat broke, he jerry-rigged a power supply from the battery to the fan motor to just keep it running so that my car wouldn't overheat. So when he died, I just remember the very real overwhelm of something so simple like, what if my car breaks down? What do I do? What if every time I would go visit my dad, he would slide me a $20 bill and be like, do you need anything else? I mean, he didn't have much more than that, but that's what he would do. He would just, do you need something? Do you need some money for some? You want, just get some food. And so all of that feeling of heaviness of, I'm 46 years old and I can still, under financial situations, feel like that 20-year-old girl of like, oh my God, where is this going to come from? Where is my help going to come from? Where, how will I be provided for? How am I going to do this? And being able to access grief in that space, or being able to feel the weight of that and be able to separate what happened to me then and attune to what I need. What does that part of me need? What did I need to hear then that I could hear now? What did 20-year-old me need to hear that feels like she's showing up in the room with my 46-year-old self? These parts of us and these experiences that we've had still affect us. And I think that's what I recognized after my divorce. Coming back to thread that needle, because wow, that went a long way around the barn. But it's the point, my point being that we are affected all the time by the things that we have experienced. And a lot of us, I would say most of us have learned how to survive. We've had coping strategies we've learned that served us to help us to not. I mean, I can't, it's hard for me looking at my children the same ages that I was when I had the losses I did and think of them going through that. Like I think, oh my goodness, how awful would that be if I were to die, if I weren't here to help them? And so one of the ways that grief shows up now about the loss of my parents, this came to my mind, it has since parenting, but every experience or milestone, I'm constantly reminded that this is my first rodeo, like something as simple as raising my daughter and realizing I didn't have a mother through the same ages that she is right now. She just turned 16, she's driving. And then I remember being 16 and with my girlfriends in high school, just being so like, oh, I don't want you to be rude to your mother. I don't want you to argue with her. I don't want y'all to do anything. I promise I probably made them feel so much shame about having their living mothers. Like, don't take it for granted. Like, but what I didn't realize is how absolutely normal that would be. And when I have a daughter and now she will absolutely tell me she is not happy with me. I am raising an Enneagram 8, which I love. But they are born for intensity. And I wanted my children to be able to speak for themselves and speak how they feel and share their thoughts. And she does that without any problem. So I think for me, realizing that my parenting gets affected by my loss of parents, because I recognize, wow, I didn't have anybody lead me through this. And I think a lot of you could say that. With my daughter, we went to the beach for her birthday and we went to a hotel down at the beach, and there was a group from Oakwood College in Huntsville. It's a HBCU about an hour and a half from me. And they were at the beach on the Gulf Coast, and they were having their choir was having a get to know you, get together with everybody and build rapport with each other. And I saw that they were there on this retreat. And on the last day when they were leaving, they were downstairs in the shared space for, I guess, the continental breakfast. And I tapped one of the ladies on the shoulder, and her name is Luana. And she's kind of like the manager for the group. And I was like, is there any way that you guys would sing for me? I mean, us, for all of us, but really me. Could you do that? And she got them to sing. The most angelic group of singers and amazing group of men and women who just exude joy. That was the best way to describe it, joy. I talked to her, and when we were talking and getting to know each other, she mentioned, because I'm sure the podcast came up, but she's like, grief. Oh, I lost my dad when I was 10. And I was like, you too? And she said and shared with me that, you know, it is kind of surprising that she's realizing into adulthood as a mother that she is affected by things that this loss that was so far long ago. And I was like, my word, yes. And we don't talk about this. And I said, is it possible? Like, is this what you're dealing with? And then we start talking about it and sharing our experience. And it was, we were having totally different experiences, but grief. We spoke that same language and we understood what that looked like in this dialect of losing a parent early on. And now you're a parent yourself. And how does that show up for you? And it was just such a beautiful reminder to me of that third point I was making about 5 years ago about wanting to share your experience with others. Because when you do, it gives life to someone else. When you share, not just that her dad died, but when we could talk about the particulars of that, when we could talk about the nuance of that and what does that look like, it was healing. It was healing for both, I imagine. For me, I can speak for me, of just that sense of community immediately with this woman that I had just met. So shout out, Luana. So grateful for your group and the video she sent me to replace the one that was lost. So I'll share their page in the notes section so y'all can go check them out yourself, because they are super talented singers. Amazing. And they made me cry. It was beautiful in a hotel lobby of all places. And I loved it. But so that pretty much sums up. I'm grateful for this modality. I am. I have to admit, I've probably recorded a solo episode maybe 4 or 5 times and have not posted one single one. And I will close my computer and I will go, well, that's not going to see the light of day. And then I'll get a vulnerability hangover for something I haven't even shared. So this is fun and it's a stretch. But what I love, and this is what I told my friend Amanda, whose podcast I got to be on, that the reason why I would even face that kind of uncomfortability and why I'm willing to hit record and eventually to upload is because I want to have the conversations that would mean something to me for my kids to hear, that would be the thing that I needed when I was that age and losing and having those losses and having somebody just talk about grief. Because I don't think we do a great job of that in our culture. I'll tell you this, I'll leave you with this. One of the byproducts of my early childhood loss is a very morbid sense of my own morbidity, that my mom was 36 when she died and my dad was 49. And when I was turning 36, it was a huge milestone of that anxiety of like very, very aware of, wow, my mom didn't live past this. So every year after that is like this new experience that I have that she didn't get to have. And then my dad being 49, and he was killed in a car accident. Someone hit him head on. And at 49, and I'm 46. So as I approach closer to 49, I have this very morbid sense And it's not predictive. Like, I'm not living with this, y'all, I'm not going to make it. That's not it. But I remember when I said out loud to my first time saying out loud to someone besides my therapist, hey, I constantly think about dying. And is that weird? And yes, if it is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird is that? No, but like, of course, that's what I'm affected. Okay, so how do I live out of that being affected? And for me, it's not meant to make me afraid. It's just meant to make me pay attention and for me to be more aware of how precious life is. But one of those things that I thought about when starting the podcast, it wasn't the initial why I started the podcast, but it's become part of it, of pushing myself to deeper past my edges of where I feel comfortable, is because I want to leave something for my children. I want them to know, and we have these conversations around the dinner table, in the car, all the things. We talk about grief, we talk about loss and death and suffering and hopefulness and depression and anxiety and all the things. All of it, messy to the joyful and everything in between. But I want a place where they have these conversations as well. So when I have them in my mind, when I push myself past my edge of wanting to leave them something that is worth listening to. So that, and I really do want to shift the way we talk about grief. I would love to be able to wake up one day and people not get bogged down because they're unwilling to address or to notice the ways they're affected, that are unwilling to meet the need that they have and meet themselves with judgment instead of compassion. And being able to inspire and say, hey, community and sharing vulnerably with people in our world is where it's at, as hard as that is to do, as difficult as that can be. So I'm glad that you're here and that you've listened this long. I hope that your day is great the rest of your day. And I thank you for listening, and y'all have a great day. Thanks for listening.